You can check us and confirm that we're live, sons.
We look pretty live. People tuning in all over the nation.
All right. Well,
let me share it.
Here we are. We're here, sons. Laying the pipe with Uncle Randy. Plumber Now podcast, sons. I got to do a little housekeeping here. It's a little different than our other shows. Got a couple of sponsors. The show is brought to you by Muscle Vodka. Muscle Vodka, very healthy vodka, very good vodka. Had it for years. They've been a sponsor for a long time. Go to musclevodka.net. Use promo code Uncle Randy. Save 20% off your Muscle Vodka, or don't. I think you should. Freaking put a little coin in Uncle Randy's pocket, sons. Hell, everybody wins.
I mean, they get a free podcast, yeah, right?
Absolutely. All right. Also brought to you by Plumber Now, sons. Plumber Now, listen, here in Canton, Georgia, there's nobody better, sons. We can do it all. Shitter clogged, got you. Got pipes busting left and right. We're doing those like crazy right now.
Can you put in a bidet if I wanted one?
Put in a bidet, no problem, sons. All day long, we do it. People do the fancy ones, the real fucking fancy ones. But yeah, we can do that. We can do anything you need. You need rough, you know, you need everything roughed in your basement that you're finishing. Hell, well, we're your guys. No problem. So Plumber Now, sons. Check us out. Yell at us if we can do anything for you. All right, so now we can kind of get started. Dude, we're here.
We are. The only issue I see is we can't see the comments right now. We got to have our phones. We need a screen. That screen should have the comments.
Yep, we will have that coming soon.
And so B's got to get on that.
So we will have to monitor the phones for the questions. This one's going to be a little different, though, because this show is not the same as our Write This Down. This is more focused, where I'm going to sit down maybe once a month, whenever the fuck Uncle Randy feels like it's when they're going to happen.
You're a busy man.
The people will come to see me. I'm going to sit down with community leaders and see if they can stand the hot seat. So couldn't start anywhere. Had to start with you. To me, that's a no-brainer, sons. Got to go with you. Champion over here. So I'm going to be asking you a lot of things that we've probably talked about before. But for the people that we put this podcast out to in the podcast world for the audio, so we will be rehashing some things.
Joe Elmore's on there saying he'll see us this weekend. Can't wait to have Joe on. Heard he's going to join the commentating team, the Hitman. He knows Elevate Fight's the place to be.
Dude, Joe knows. Joe's a champion. He's going to be on this show. I'm going to have him on this show as well. Multifaceted champion, sons. Just the people's champion of bare knuckle. Dude's never, I don't see him losing fights. He's freaking savage.
I feel like bare knuckle was created for him.
Oh, he loves the shit.
Yeah, like.
He loves the shit. He was, I remember at the first Elevate when he was there, and I asked him about Warren told me he actually likes to get hit in the face. And he pushed his fist against his nose and it just pushed it flat. Yeah. Just nose is smashed like a champ. So, yeah, love the Hitman, sons. All right, so we're going to kind of dive into this. So, obviously, you're Gary Lamb,
The Gary Lamb.
Very famous, infamous, famous, whatever you want to say. People know you. You're kind of a big deal.
In my own head, especially.
So, people know you as a promoter, pastor, founder of a mega church that was here, right? You helped start one of those.
Yeah, I did. I was the pastor there.
And so I kind of want to start even before that, though, because that's kind of where I want to start. So your first life, actually, you've been a hustler since you were a kid. You were working young, had your own little business.
Yeah, when I was 16, I had a comic book store.
So you've hustled. When did the thought of the gospel come into your brain, and how did it get put there?
Yeah.
And what made you see yourself going that route?
Yes, so I was hell on wheels. Like any good guy who comes to God, I always like to say, it starts with, and I met a girl. And my buddy ran the Boys and Girls Club, and this girl got a job there.
Yeah.
And she was a Christian girl. And my buddy bet me $50 I couldn't have sex with her.
All right. Well,
and game on. 2 years later, I married her, and I won that bet. And she went to church, and I went to church with her. And I was blown away. I'd never really been active in church. Hadn't really heard much about church. You've heard me share the story. This little 5 foot nothing Cherokee Indian man got up on stage and told me I was going to fry like bacon.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not want to fry like bacon. And I gave my life to Christ. Yeah. And man, I radically had my life changed. Yeah. And kind of announced my call to preach, whatever you want to do there. Mm-hmm. And about a year and a half later, I was running a pretty large singles ministry, college ministry, yeah. And felt it was time for me to go out and pastor, and started looking at college towns, and came across a group of about 13 people in Ames, Iowa, where Iowa State University is. Okay. And they were looking for someone to come start a church there. And so I moved out there. And here's the funny thing. I was part of a movement called Independent Fundamental Baptist. Mm-hmm. Women couldn't wear pants. Wow. King James only. You could only use the King James, old hymns. And
wow.
So I started this church, and it started to grow. And my wife and I at the time went on vacation, and I got sick. I got food poisoning, the sickest I've ever been in my life. Mm-hmm. And it was our first time in about 2 years we'd been on vacation. We were at the beach. And I told her, I said, hey, when you came into town, we passed a Christian bookstore. I said, would you just go grab me a book? Mm-hmm. I can't leave the room. And then you go enjoy the beach.
Yeah.
She came back and said, hey, they said this was the bestseller. It just came out. And it was a book by a guy named Rick Warren called The Purpose-Driven Church.
Yep.
And I read that book. And he started talking about doing church for the unchurched people. And I had grown up not churched. Mm-hmm. And everything I read in that book resonated with me. And so I stood up the next week in this Independent Fundamental Baptist Church and said, hey, here's how we're going to start doing church. And we're going to drop the name Baptist. And so we went in reverse growth. We went from about 300 people to about 30 people in about 2 weeks. And I just hunkered down and I rebuilt that church. And I was there for a few years. And then I realized I really didn't know what I was doing. And so through some friends, I met this guy who pastored a mega church in Paulding County, was running about 5,000 people in a high school gym. Mm-hmm. And they wanted to start a church in Georgia. And he said, why don't you come here for a year and learn from us? And so I went there, raised my own support, sold books on eBay.
Did you learn from them though?
Yeah, I learned a lot. I learned a lot. I learned how to do portable church and setting up and tearing down.
You're still good at that.
Yeah.
That's worked into your
afterlife. Worked into my afterlife. I moved here. And we started Revolution Church, and I was there for 5 years, and it was one of the fastest growing churches in the country. And we know the story, no point in going into it unless you just want to, but imploded, lost everything, was done with ministry, felt still very called to the city of Canton, had a group want me to start a church. And I said, here's the deal. I'll only start a church if we move to the poorest part of town and we serve people.
Yep.
And well, we've done that now for 12 or 13 years. And, man, you're part of that church now, and it's been interesting. And we're literally in the poorest part of our town, and we live out our name, which is Action Church.
Yep.
And I've never taken a salary. And so my big deal is I put on events for a living. I own a fight league. I own a wrestling promotion. I put on large scale festivals. I put on city summer concerts. I do whatever I can to make sure my family has a roof over their head.
Yep. And we're going to get to all that. So, kind of go back to Iowa. So your heart's on fire for the Lord.
Yeah, I'm young. You're new. I'm stupid. You know, 22 years old.
But in high school, you were a problem.
Yeah, I was hell on wheels in high school.
Not very good grades.
Not very good grades. Graduated 141 out of 147.
Yeah, really worried your mom, right?
Worried my mom a lot. Yeah.
That's crazy.
My mom just made a comment. I don't know if you saw it recently on a Facebook post. And she said that her whole life people would come up to her and be like, are you Gary Lamb's mom? And she never knew how that was going to go. And she said it still happens to her. And so, but it is what it is.
So we go from Iowa, you come here, you get some mentors, you're starting a church. I know the church you started at one point, you were meeting in the movie theater.
Yeah, we met in the movie theater. We started actually in the middle school. We were there for a year. Then we moved to the movie theater and
we just kept growing.
We were there for 4 years. And then right before I lost it, we had outgrown the movie theater and we had moved to the county conference center.
Mm-hmm.
And so
when you were at the peak there, when you knew you're growing, you're outgrowing the movie theater, everything's moving. I know you've talked about it before. You were on like the top 10 list of up and coming.
Yeah.
I don't know what the word to preach, young preachers.
Yeah, I was
hot named shit preachers.
Top 10 pastors under 30.
Yeah, there you go. So
you know, all those lists really matter.
All that's going good. Is your heart still the same fire for God that it was that drove you into it at that point?
At that point,
mm-hmm.
I think it had changed. I think that I realized the business of church for the first time ever.
Yeah.
I realized the pedestal at that time, at which as a pastor, I'm 28 years old at that time, could be put on. And my talent far exceeded my character at that point in my life. And so I don't think I was ready for that much. It sounds really weird to say fame, but, you know, I was a very big fish in a small pond, the religious pond.
Yeah.
And so that was right when Twitter had come out. Blogging was huge. Outreach Magazine named my blog one of the top 10 most influential evangelic blogs. I was named one of the top 10 Twitter people for evangelics. I mean, I was one of the first to adapt and go to the social media craze. Yeah. And so as the church grew, we're meeting in this movie theater. I think it became, I like to think my heart. That's a tough question.
Yeah.
I like to think I still cared about unchurched people.
Of course.
I still wanted to impact lives. But I think I surrounded myself around some mentors of some mega churches, some of the biggest names out there that you would know if I said them. And they began to tell me what I needed to do to continue to grow the church. And so I moved from being a pastor to being a CEO. I had security around me. You couldn't get to me. Mm-hmm. You couldn't. I had a gatekeeper. I had an assistant who checked all my emails. I mean, I was untouchable.
Yeah.
And so you lose sight of ministry and you become very corporate in a church setting. Yeah. And I don't think that's the way the church was designed. But at that time, you're not thinking about that. You're getting praise and everyone's jerking you off. And I know this sounds really crazy. Women are throwing themselves at you. And I know that sounds really weird in a church setting. But again, you're getting up there and you're being a fake. This husband and wife out there, she has no respect for her husband.
Mm-hmm.
And she thinks she has respect for you, but she's only hearing you an hour a week telling all your good stories.
Yeah.
You know, she doesn't know what a piece of shit you are at home, that you're neglecting your wife at home, that you're neglecting your kids, that you're not doing what you should have been doing. And so, man, as people are just pouring and blowing smoke up your ass, I don't know how at that time in my life you go without getting your ego just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, I would preach three services on Sunday because it took three services to hold all the people. I would get on a plane and I would fly out and I would do conferences all over the country till about Thursday. I would fly back into town, have staff meetings. We'd get ready at 13 full-time staff at that time. And we get ready and we do another church service. And it was just, it became bigger and bigger. And it became about everything and anything but God at that time. Yeah, and I struggle with church now because that you and me have had some discussions about church. And I'm a cynic when it comes to everything. I walk around buildings and almost criticize everything.
Yeah. Well, at that age, you're basically a rock star.
Right.
In just a different genre. But the
100%.
You know, I can only imagine in your mind and being in your position at that age.
You know what an arrogant ass I am now. So can you imagine that?
Hell no.
Like,
unbelievable.
Like when people tell me I'm arrogant now, I laugh. I'm like, man, you got the humble Gary. Shit. You got humble Gary.
Oh yeah. Yeah. So we don't have to rehash story. So you lose the church.
Yep.
You made mistakes. Unfaithful in your marriage.
Yep.
We've both been
lost everything.
Open and honest about that. And
went from mega church pastor to sleeping in my Jeep Cherokee for two nights before a family allowed me to move into their basement.
And most people on planet Earth would have moved out of this town.
Right.
What made you stay?
Yeah. So this is where my faith kicks in, and I don't want to be kooky and I don't want to be spooky.
No, but
I felt called to this town. I felt called to this town when I moved here. And I felt like God never released me from this town. Everybody I knew, every pastor I knew, every mentor I knew said, listen, move away, get a fresh start and start over. But I couldn't. I felt called to this town. I still feel called to this town. Trust me, there's a lot of, I'm in a financial position where I could live on the beach now. I could live in the mountains now. I could live pretty much anywhere I want to. But every time I try to leave Canton, the door shuts for me to leave Canton. I love this city. And whether I'm pastoring in this city or not pastoring in the city, for whatever reason, these are my people, and I have influence here and impact here. And so I couldn't leave. And so I volunteered as a chaplain for the police department. Mm-hmm. I volunteered as a chaplain for the hospital in between, because I had a guy challenge me. He said, if you feel called to this community, serve it without getting paid. Mm-hmm. So before we started Action Church, I just loved on people and did whatever I could do to be there for people. I couldn't leave here.
But despite that, there were people, and you can tell me if I'm wrong about this. I've heard this story secondhand. But when you lost the church or the church lost you, however you want to put it, there people would come in, you'd be in restaurants, and they would leave.
Oh, it still to this day happens. It's still to this
but
day.
But then it was, then it you was, knew it exactly what it was. For now, it's probably just haters at this point.
Well, yeah, some of them are from my past. But yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember me and Christine, I think our first Valentine's, one of the staff members got, we were at Downtown Kitchen. One of the staff members gets seated from my former church right next to me. And at that time, that was 5 years after it had happened, 4 years after it had happened when I met Christine. And they asked the waiter to move them because they didn't want to have dinner next to me. And which is fine because they don't have dinner next to their asses either. So it worked out good.
Wow. That's incredible, though. Unbelievable. All right. So this is one that I've always wanted to know, like how you would address this with people. And we're going to lighten up as we go, as we get in. But I want everybody to know the whole backstory that are going to be listening to this for the first time to know about Gary Lamb. So what I know of you, we've become good friends. I know you're probably one of the quickest people, and I'm very similar, when you fuck up to admit it. Get it out of the way, quick.
Own
like,
your shit.
I mean, now I've learned my lesson. Yeah. Like, if I fuck up, I'm almost pre-apologizing.
Yeah, for, own your shit.
For screwing up. But there's been people that have told me before when I've made mistakes, and I'm just honest enough now where I'm at in my point in life that I can do that. And I know that a lot of people aren't ready for that kind of truth in their personal lives. But they'll tell me that, like, it looks like I forgive myself too soon.
Right.
I could see somebody saying that to you because they've said it to me. Yeah. What would you say to them about that, of when you've made mistakes and you get in front of it and you apologize and you mean it and you come clean about whatever it is, you know, whatever the issue is, and somebody says, you're forgiving yourself too easy.
Yeah.
You tell them just fuck
because
up.
I think misery loves company. Yeah. And so they're miserable people. And so they want you to beat yourself up
to death.
And people, when you've hurt somebody or when you've done something wrong, they're not happy until you've had the punishment they deem worthy of you to have.
That's good. Yes.
And so at the end of the day, I can't go back in time. I can't change it. All I can do is prove to the people that I have hurt that I recognize I hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm making the changes. But I also can't move forward to making the changes if I'm living in the mess.
You absolutely cannot.
So it doesn't do me a lot of good. Now, that doesn't mean there's not moments where it doesn't hit me. There's not.
Sure.
It doesn't mean there's not moments where I don't think about it, but I can't live there and move forward in that. And I use this example. So when I lost everything, I was living in someone's basement. I didn't leave that basement for 30 days.
Yep.
On the 30th day, the lady whose house or the couple I was living to, the lady hauled in and said, hey, FedEx just delivered a package for you. I said, FedEx just delivered a package for me. Interesting. I went up there and my ex-wife at the time, my current wife at that time, had sent a FedEx package with all the bills for the last month. And here's what hit me. The electric company didn't give a fuck that I'd lost my job.
Nope.
The mortgage company didn't care that I had had an affair and lost everything. Nope. Life went on. The next morning I got up, I went and started a company. And I made sure my bills got paid.
Yep.
Life goes on. The sun still comes up no matter how bad you screw up. Here's the amazing thing. You go to bed and the sun comes up the next day and life goes on. And I'm not going to live the rest of my life wallowing in my shit.
Yep.
Own your shit. Embrace the suck. Deal with the consequences. That doesn't mean the consequences don't go away.
You've never said that.
You still got to deal with the long-term consequences. You got to deal with the long-term healing. You got to deal with the reconciliation to the people you've hurt.
Yep.
But I'm moving on.
Yeah.
And if you want to move on with me, now that doesn't mean if I hurt Christine, for example, that doesn't mean I expect Christine to forgive and forget immediately. I'm going to walk with her through that process. I'm going to answer her questions as she's dealing with the hurt, but I can't live there and let it consume me and own me because there's nothing I can do to change it except my actions moving forward.
Yeah. And see, that's where I think a lot of people, it's kind of the world we live in, you know, that there's just so many soft people that are terrified of losing everything. And from mine and your perspectives, we both know it doesn't kill you.
Yeah. Here's what I say about failure. Failure sucks.
Yeah.
Failure's not fatal.
No. And it can feel like it. It can feel like it, but it's not.
It can make you wish it was fatal.
Yeah.
But the reality is, just like I said a few minutes ago, the sun comes up the next day.
No matter what.
Life goes on and you got to get busy living or you're just wasting your time. I know guys that go through divorces and they're beating themselves up 3 years later. You just wasted 3 fucking years of your life, man, on something that you didn't change. You're still divorced. Mm-hmm. So what is wallowing in it do? Yeah. Move on.
I don't understand either the need a lot of people have. And this is I mean, again, this leads back to, and we'll cover this a little bit in further detail, but the mindset of people now, as soft as they are, you know, we're definitely a soft generation of people. But the need to put people on the whipping post.
Right.
They need it. They want it.
Right.
I mean, it's like unbelievable that they want to be so tolerant. Like, that's the whole thing now, MO. You know, you really got to be tolerant. Yes. Yeah, you got to be super tolerant of everything and everybody. But they will strap you to that wooden beam and beat you to death like they did Jesus.
They will.
Beat you to death.
They will, man. They will remind you over and over and over. They will try to cancel you. They will try to put you out of commission. They will try to do whatever they can to ruin your reputation. And I have prided myself, and it sounds really arrogant. It sounds really cocky, and I don't mean it to. That's genuinely not my heart. But I've just come to the conclusion I'm uncancelable.
Oh, 100%.
Because I have owned, and I make no bones about the fact that I don't have my shit together. I'm going to fuck up. I'm going to let you down. I'm going to screw up along the way. But I'm going to own it and move on. And how are you going to beat me up for something I've owned?
No.
I'm not hiding my secrets. I'm parading them on the front porch.
100%. I mean, we both talked about that. Obviously, we both feel very much the same about that. I mean, hell, I wish people would can't. It's good for business.
Exactly.
Like, at this point, and I've even seen you do it. You're a master at this. I've got your whole algorithm down, Pat. When you want to stoke the fire, nobody steps forward.
Right.
You know?
No. But I'll even give this example, and I don't want to give into details about it because it was a private conversation with the church.
Sure.
But 3 months ago, 3.5 months ago, after a service, we cut off the podcast, we cut off the live feed, and I shared with them some issues that I was going through, and Christine and I were going through, and I didn't go into details. I just said, hey, I want you to know X, Y, Z is going on. Most churches, that would have destroyed that church. Our church has grown since then.
Yeah.
Our church has done great since then. And you know what? The issue that we were dealing with at that time has resolved itself 1,000 times over because we didn't keep it in the darkness. We kept it in light, and we put people that loved us and cared about us around us. Most churches literally would have shut down over that.
Well, that's where you learn and you can see when a church isn't being a church.
Right.
Because a real church would do exactly what our church did.
Right.
And you dig in together.
No gossip, no rumors. No. I'm sure some people gossip, but there wasn't enough that it got back to me.
No, hell no.
And so, and we went on and we moved on. And
well, they should love you, right?
Right.
Like when you mess up in life, you're real friends. And that kind of shows you who your friends are, right? But do they reach out to hug you or do they try to throw that cheap punch?
And people love to throw the cheap punch, man, because people are insecure with themselves and they're miserable with their own lives. And so, man, if they can bring up your faults, it makes them feel better about their faults.
Oh, 100%. All day long, justifying their shittiness. It runs rampant. All right, so let's jump into some of this about the local community. So we covered your love for Canton, Georgia. Could have left it, didn't.
Yeah.
You sat in a shit pile of shit soup.
Yeah, and I can't describe it any more than that. And I know that sounds weird. I just felt, and I still to this day feel called here. When I met Christine, one of the first things she ever said to me was, man, I don't like Canton. And you can ask her this. And I looked at her and said, then we're probably not going to work out.
Yeah.
I said, you need to understand, I will never leave this town that I can see because God's called me to it. Mm-hmm. And she said, I get it. And now she knows. And she understands my heart. As much as they drive me crazy in the city of Canton makes me want to bash my head against the wall.
Yep.
Man, I have a heart for the people in this community.
Well, so you touched on a little bit about our church. So Action Church, you're the pastor.
Yeah.
We go to that church. There's been in the 2 years I've been going there, a tangible change.
Right.
Or a shift.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's a huge change, but it's or an evolution. You see it within not only the people that are coming, but the excitement, the volunteer work. Like, because you're not one to really, and I get it, because it wouldn't look right for you to, and it's not from your heart, but the things that you do good, you don't really talk about.
Yeah.
And you don't feel a need to lead with that, you know. But you know, the church does a shitload of stuff.
Does it a lot.
I mean, the shelter, the Give Canton the Bird, the
feeding
people.
Yeah, we run a food pantry, right. Yo, I mean, we're kind of a hub for other ministries.
Addiction.
Bethesda.
Yeah.
Sets up there. We do a lot. I think some of that, the church probably suffers because of my past scars. Because I was in a church where I saw the business side of the church become bigger than the gospel side of the church. That's a trigger for me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it, in my mind, it led to one of my downfalls.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd very much try not to get involved in the business of Action Church. And then because my profession is that of a promoter, Action I do is something because I love it.
Yep.
So when I start the promoting aspect of Action, I feel disingenuous. I feel like I'm turning it into the business where maybe if someone else wasn't a promoter for a living, they could go do that. For me, I'm now turning what I love and is my passion into a business because that is my business, and it just sits weird with me. And you had some deep discussions.
Yeah,
about
and it
that.
Becomes a job. And right? You don't want
like
it to
you
be
promote
a job.
What you're doing with Community Now a lot. I don't think you're wrong for that.
Yeah,
if I didn't promote for a living, I would promote all that we do.
Mm-hmm.
It tangles the web with me, and I don't enjoy doing
it. No, totally. And it, honestly, it would. I don't know. You're doing it right, you know. But there's nothing wrong with, you know. That's why I like to come in and shout sometimes about what all is done very good out of that build. What that shitty building in the ghetto of Canton does good.
It's amazing.
You could replace a city hall. Yeah. You know, more good is done there.
Of course.
For people that need it.
It really is. It's a church for the city in the city, and that was important to us. And we live out our name. We take action in our community.
Yeah, and it's just such a diverse group. But so do you ever feel like when you see this, right, like when you see that the – vigil was held there and the community's running the building. Do you ever get like a little weird itch? Like, oh shit, I don't want this to get like, I do want this to be embraced by the community, but I don't want it to get too big. Like how do you balance?
No,
that?
I don't. So here's what I want. I want 10,000 people there, but I want to know we didn't change to get 10,000 people there.
Gotcha.
If I have to turn it, here's the reality. There's probably better preachers than me in this town. There's no better promoters or marketers than me in this town.
Mm-hmm.
So if I wanted to walk away from my festivals and walk away from wrestling and walk away from fight and pour all of my attention into Action Church and branding that and marketing that and promoting that, we'd have a huge church. I don't want to do that.
But you'd be miserable.
I'd be miserable. So if it grows organically and I feel, dare I say, a movement of God brings those people in. We're never going to turn anyone away.
No.
So as people continue to come in, that's awesome. But I want it to be where God gets the credit for it, where I feel like in my previous life, I got the credit for it.
Well, that's awesome. That's a huge thing to learn. But just so people know, that's a real fucking thing at our church. You could be sitting next to a homeless guy.
Literally.
Any given Sunday.
Or.
A rich, a billionaire.
You could be sitting next to a multimillionaire.
100%.
That's the weird, and you might not know which one's which.
Hell no, you might not.
It's kind of weird.
It's hard to touch.
Right.
Only the smell.
Right, exactly.
You can smell them sometimes.
Yeah, the millionaires seem to take a shower at least once a week.
Yeah, but you probably wouldn't. No. You know what? And that's great. There's no, you know, it's just a group of people, imperfect people.
Yeah.
Coming together. And to me, it's a good understanding. And I love that's the mold of the church, you know? I mean, and to the highest testament to it, to the whole church, is that, you know, my wife didn't grow up in church, didn't really go to church.
I didn't know
she
that about
loves, me. She's not, you know, you talk about doing church for people don't do church. That she's
yeah, the, I didn't know she didn't grow up in
she's
church.
The one, no, man, not zero about it, you know, and you know, she's a big, like, hey, we're going to church.
Yeah.
We're going to church. That to find a place that fits is, it's hard for a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, and I think we keep it practical. I always say it's AA meets comedy show meets rock concert. And I mean,
Phil May, son.
You could
best band. And
when your worship pastor looks like Ronnie Van Zant, come on now, and sings it better than Skinner does. It's a unique place. And but I like to say you could be an atheist and come to our church and you're going to leave there with something. It's practical.
I think I'm
going to
give you something.
Of course
there
are.
Yeah.
And I'm just giving you practical principles to live by, whether you believe there's a God or not. I'm convinced that eventually you're going to see a difference in us and you're going to realize, man, what is that difference? Maybe I need to give this God thing a try.
So do you ever think, or do you pay any attention to if people say that you're dumbing down your pastoring for the crowd?
No, I think I'm so used to hearing that. I've heard it my entire ministry.
Mm-hmm.
When I first moved here, it used to bother me and I used to think I needed to get real deep and I would, I would begin to lose the crowd. And I'm like, nah, you've heard me say this. I keep the cookies on the bottom shelf.
Yeah.
And I want everyone to be able to eat some. And here's my issue. Here's my issue with most mature Christians who want to go deeper. We just want to go deeper. The fuck you do. You don't want to go deeper because you can't do the first two things, love God and love people. Mm-hmm. You can't master the two simplest things, love God, love people. So how are you going to go deeper? Mm-hmm. When you show me that you're loving God and loving people with your actions, then come to me and tell me you want me to break down the book of Revelation. Because here's the thing. Most people might find this surprising. I have a doctorate degree in theology.
Yeah,
I know. And so I can go deep as you want to go. But the problem is you can't live out the simple things. Mm-hmm. Most people can't even tell their friends about Jesus. Most people don't even know how to financially give to a church. They don't even know how to attend church. So you want to get deep. You're not even doing the two simple things, yeah. Loving God and loving people.
Yeah. Fuck yeah, man. So what would you do looking back on it now? So if you could put yourself in being a church member and what all happened to you, if your pastor, what happened with you happened, how do you, knowing what you know now, would you be one that's like, man, you know, you got to love and yeah. Fucking forgive people.
Yeah, I don't really have any regrets on how stuff went down because I wouldn't be where I'm at today. But I definitely think the church in general does not know how to deal with messiness among its leadership.
Because they're worried about image, right?
They're worried about image. The there's no way you're going to convince me that this pastor screwed up, so let's kick him to the curb. Like my church at the time literally sent out letters saying, here's what Gary did. We are choosing to side with his, they said this, we are going to love on his wife. Other pastors will make sure Gary's tended to. You're talking about people that I loved, and literally some of those people I kicked in doors and drug them out of crack houses for 5 years, and yet I screwed up, and it was the unforgivable sin. I'm not saying I should have remained as pastor.
Sure, sure.
I'm not saying any of that stuff, but I think the difference is you saw that between what we recently went through at Action Church, and it was not the same situation, but where, hey, I'm screwed up. Just want you to know you might hear some rumors, and people were like, cool.
So
what do we do?
What do you say to some of these pastors? Because I know from being your friend, we've talked about it before, but you've seen a number of pastors go through what you went through since you went through.
Yeah, we're the church.
Even
for that.
Here locally.
Yeah.
Like you've seen other pastors get turned on by their congregation. I mean, you've talked about
it. I always reach out to them.
Okay.
I'm the first one to reach out to them. And I had a mentor, the man that I considered my pastor, want to meet with me after I lost everything. And so I'm broken. I've lost everything.
No all money, by the way. You only had enough money to get one little Caesar's
pizza. One little Caesar's pizza, right. He wanted to meet at Starbucks, and I met him at Starbucks. And like all I knew was my calling. And his first words out of his mouth were, I need you to understand something. And I looked at him and said, yes, sir. And he said, you're done. You're done in ministry. You'll never be in ministry again. And I remember that deflated me because that's all I knew was ministry.
Yeah.
My wife's left me. I don't have my kids. All I have is ministry. And you're telling me I'm never going to be in ministry again, which is what I feel called to be in. So I always make an intention. And any pastor who's ever come through our doors fallen, they will tell you that I look at them and say, hey, sucks, man. But no, God's not done with you.
Yep.
And I always want them to know. And if it's other pastors in our town that have gone through things, I reach out to them. I figure out a way to get a message to them. And I let them know. And here's the funny thing, sad thing. I don't know. There was three guys who came after me viciously. Pastors. The blogs were big at that time.
Yeah.
You can go back and Google and still find the blogs. These guys were just ruthlessly attacking me. All three of those men in the next 18 months lost their church for affairs.
Fuck, man.
And I was the first one to reach out to all three of them. Mm. Hey. Just want you to know I love you.
Yep.
Why would you send that to me? I attacked you so long. I said, you attacked me because you were covering up your own sin. I get it. I said, but if you need anything, I'm here for you.
Yeah.
And because I've been there, man. You don't want to look at someone who's lost everything and tell them you've lost everything.
Yeah.
You want to look at someone and say, man, that sucks. But you can pick yourself up and move on.
But you kind of adopt, and this is a recent revelation of mine, but I was thinking about, you know, college football wrapping up and, of course, my beloved Bama going out and Saban retiring. But you kind of do a Saban-ish rehab. Like you've had some pastors that have gotten out of it and come through our doors, and then you'll let them preach every once in a while.
We've got two current pastors in our church now.
But I'm just saying, so it really is kind of a Saban program.
Yeah, I never thought of it like that. Yeah. But I mean, where else are you going to go?
Yeah,
no other church is going to accept you. Hell so no. You got to roll into Action Church.
Yeah. But it gets people back on their, on their feet.
I try to get them on stage as quickly as possible too. And that's went over like screen doors on submarines to a lot of people. Cause I remember one of my mentors looked at me and said, he said, man, you need to take a break. And I said, I'll take a break. Tell me how long. And I never forget that. He said, 7 years. Jesus. And I said, 7 years. Like, I thought he's fixing to give me some biblical verses to explain that. I said, well, what do you mean? Just seems like a good time. No. No, that's not going to happen. So if you'd have kept me out of ministry for 7 years, 3 years in, I'd have been snorting lines and banging nines because I'd had no purpose in life. So I try to let these guys know, man, you're going to preach. Grady, when he came in our church, and I'm not sharing his, hasn't been shy about his story. He was a fallen pastor, ended up in our church. And I think within 2 months, I had him back on stage preaching for us. I want you to know, man, the calling of God is irrevocable. And the calling of God is not messed up because of your mess ups, and your mess ups will become your greatest ministry. So I want them back on stage, man. I want my leaders. If they don't got a limp, I don't want to hear from them.
100%. That's where we're about to dive in. All right. So we're covering that. So boom, let's transition on. So I want to talk about here local in our community, right? Like here,
Canton, Georgia,
Cherokee County,
Holly Springs. Woodstock, Canton, Alaska, Ackworth, that little corner of Crackworth that's in Cherokee County.
Yeah, but so where do you see that our local community is winning? What are we winning at?
I definitely think are we talking in the nonprofit sector? Or are we just talking
overall? Like what's winning here? What's doing well? Cause we're going to go into what's not going well.
I mean, I think overall as a county, the growth as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, people are moving from all over the country to be in Cherokee County.
It's expensive.
It's expensive, but people want to live here. Yep. I believe it or not, I think our school district, I think we have a good schools. It's a safe community. It's a thriving community. It's a very entrepreneurial community. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of hustlers and a lot of people stepping out and chasing their dreams here. And it's hard because you've enlisted as the county. So I could tell you certain things about Woodstock I love, certain things about Canton I love. But as a county, I could say this, but it doesn't apply to the whole county.
Yeah, let's just go with Canton then. We'll minimize because that's what we know right now.
Yeah, I think what Canton is doing well is the nonprofit sector is very powerful.
It is big. Very big.
The school systems here, the growth here is good. Believe it or not, I know a lot of people rail and rag on the structure, the roads. I mean, I think Canton does as good a job as any in that. I think Canton is trying to get an entrepreneurial spirit. Woodstock definitely exceeded them for a long time in that area. Mm-hmm. But they're trying to get that. They're trying somewhat. We've talked about the downtown.
Restaurants are dominant here. I don't know if you can find a better.
We've got the best restaurants probably in North Georgia.
Yeah, I don't per square inch, what you got available.
And I think the people, and I'll tell you this. I think, and I'm sure this is in every community, but I don't live in every community. The people here are good.
Yeah.
There's a pantry right next door on the other side of this wall that's your pantry that is stocked by people.
Yep.
I literally just had a shelter open for 5 nights that all I had to do was make one post, and restaurants from all over.
Powerful Rick Cope out scooping people up off the street, son. Getting them in.
And running with them. And staying there every night.
People sleep on Rick Cope's heart, son. So they really
do. He's hard. He's a hard man. But he's a hard, callous son of a bitch,
but he does love people. He's got a soft part that people don't.
Yeah, I was glad that the weather warmed up because I knew by Sunday he was done. He was starting to get on the
heart was getting,
he was starting to get on their asses a little bit, and he was ready to whoop a couple of them, and I was like, good, it was perfect timing. Sunday, give him a break, he'll be rejuvenated the next cold snap, and he'll be ready to love on them again.
All right, so where's Canton hurting?
I think our downtown, while a vast improvement from what it used to be, is still a very not destination type downtown.
It's docile.
We're here at the mill. I think the same thing about the mill. And I love the mill. I run a lot of events here. I still think Canton is in that potential stage. And I struggle with that because I love the word potential, but I feel like we've been in the potential stage all 18 years I've lived here.
Yep.
And I'd like to see a unified vision in regards to making this a destination city. It's a destination city. We have the Etowah River running through the middle of us. We're sitting at a 600,000 square foot denim factory that's been completely redeveloped with mm-hmm. breweries and restaurants. We have a great downtown that's walkable. We have great things, great restaurants downtown.
That's good eating.
You know, art gallery downtown, a couple of bars downtown. I would like to see a little more
so
of that
they,
because there's no people. It's a weird, they've got to get high density housing in the downtown area and they're trying, but even, you know, you can build 170 homes, 170 homes don't change it. Woodstock learned to build up.
Yeah. I think though it starts where, and tell me if you agree or disagree here, but it may sound minimal to people, but music. Yes. Woodstock owns the music. And here there's a lot of really good musicians here.
Yeah.
Tons of them. We know a lot of them, but if you're going to go play, they're going to go play in Woodstock first.
They are. Woodstock is laid out a little different where there's a lot of outside space. Our downtown does not have a lot of green space except for here at the mill.
Isn't there talk of a pavilion here in Canton being done?
I think they've talked about an amphitheater for a while. I don't know that anything is in stone for that. I'm not privy to that information. But even on our main street where there's just not a lot of green space, where you go around Woodstock, there's the restaurants are able to have porches and different things that you can have live music on. But I think we're trying and I think we're there. I mean, I think we're getting there. It's just a slow process. And I think the slow process is hard for people like you and me that live in a microwave society. Yeah. We're going to make stuff happen immediately. And so I don't want to hear your 5-year plan because I might not be here in 5 years. I want to hear your 30-day plan.
100%. So, guest number two on the show is going to be Bill.
Yeah, and Bill's great. And I think Bill's been great for our city.
Yeah, I like Bill a lot. He's one of the few people that I've admitted, and I've even told him this, where, you know, I think I judged him a little too soon. And I'm guilty as anybody of doing that stuff. But he's a nice man.
He's a nice man, and he loves this city.
He does.
And he served the city for years before he became the mayor. And Bill's vision for a thriving Canton might not look like mine, and that's okay. Just tell me the vision, and I can decide then if I want to be part of it or
sure.
not. And Bill and those guys, man, they had to deal with a lot of structural issues and policy issues that were put in place before they ever got in office. And so it is a slower process. And I think that's why I'm not designed for politics, because I can't move slow like that.
Well, that's where I was going to go. So a lot of people have asked, you've even talked about it recently, if you'd ever consider running for office. Give me a reason that you would, but then all the real reasons why you won't.
Yeah. So the only reason I would ever run for office, and this is genuine, this is not for shock value,
is I could win.
I think it would be fun as fuck to run a campaign.
And you could win.
And yeah, I think that I would love to stir it up so much, which is what I do in the running process.
It's a local Trump because he wants to tear into
To run and run a campaign where I'm on the ticket would be the funnest thing in the world. It would excel at everything in a marketing, branding, promoting,
God almighty.
Just attacking people.
And if the first person that comes at you and talks about having an affair, how much would you just, they would destroy themselves by asking that low hanging fruit.
Right. Yeah.
And they're going
to
do it.
So I would love to run for office. The problem is
be in office.
The problem is once I won, I want to be able to resign.
Yeah. All right. So the big, that's your reason why you wouldn't.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not, because honestly, they can't bring anything out on you. You know,
that's the reason I would run is to run. The reason I wouldn't run is it's funny. At the end of the day, as much as I say I love this city, I love what I love about this city. I don't want to sit in, and this is where being a councilman and being the mayor, man, kudos to those guys. I don't want to meet every Thursday for a council meeting and talk about budget. Stuff. I don't want to talk about roads. I don't want to talk about the reservoir.
Yeah.
I don't want to talk about our water issues and a waste treatment plant. No. Those things are vital and they need to be discussed, but I'm not your guy. Yeah. I want to talk about entertainment. What are we doing to draw people? And so I wouldn't like those issues. And it would be a step back for me. The reality is I don't need it. And this sounds arrogant, and call it arrogant if you want to. I don't need a title.
Yeah.
And so I have influence. And there's nothing, and I don't mean this, I'm not challenging our council. Please don't read that. But there's nothing they could do if I was opposed to an issue. I'd rally a troop so fast, my tribe so fast, to go against them if I was passionate about an issue. And there's not a person on that council, and I love our mayor, but including Bill Grant, who could rally a ravenous fan base like I could to go after an issue. So if I'm in office, I can't do that as an influencer, and people that I've poured into and people that trust me, I feel like I have way more influence in this community than I do by any title.
Yeah, John's got a good point there. Mayor coming in hot there. You get more done not being in office.
That's true. Well, I don't have to. I had an individual message me the day after I made that post about influence first. He said, man, you need to learn to play nice. And I get what his heart was, and I like the guy a lot. But that's the problem. I don't have to play nice because I haven't run for council. Yeah. I don't got to sit through meetings. I can get on right now, make any post I want to make. And at the end of the day, there's not shit anybody can do about it because I answer to nobody.
Yeah. And you've kind of designed your life to be that way.
Right. People expect it.
So fuck that, man. I'm with you. All right. So let me give you a few names and I want you to give me your thoughts on each one of them. So see if you can remember. If not, I'll come back to you. Andy Elliott, Tony Robbins, Paul Harvey, Billy Graham, Joe Rogan, and Sean Wallen.
Yeah, that's a very diverse group of people. Are we doing them one at a time?
Yeah, one at a time.
Who was the first one?
Andy Elliott.
So I'm going to be real
he's
honest
new
with
sales
you.
Sales guy.
I don't know who that is.
You haven't seen him on Facebook?
No.
He's grown pretty huge. He's had a lot of people come on. He's the closer. They call him the closer.
Oh, the closer. Yeah. So
he's sales. He thinks he can close everybody.
Of all those people, he's the least I know. I've recently got turned on to him. He's got a method and he's got a system. And there's no doubt that the system works. Mm-hmm. The system was a turnoff to me.
Yep.
But the system works. And man, I learned this about people like that. You eat the meat and throw away the bones. It's what I do with chicken. So there's things I can learn from him, but I don't got to follow everything he does.
Yep. All right. So we'll go next. Tony Robbins.
The OG. I don't
underrated still today. People think he's not relevant. He is still as relevant.
Let me tell you something. I have recently, and by recently, I mean yesterday in the last month, but yesterday even, have got my wife turned on to Tony Robbins. And you don't realize the wisdom that Tony Robbins spits out.
Decades,
he's a genius. He's a genius. He's the OG of positive thinking. He's the OG of self-evaluation. And if you haven't listened to his podcast that came out last week with Theo Von,
yeah, I have.
It's amazing. It's amazing. And you just forget. And here he is 62 and he's so fucking smart that he goes on Theo Von's podcast. Because he knows
shit.
Let I want to reach these younger people.
Demographic.
I got to get on their podcast. He's the greatest.
Yeah.
And people can say he's a fake and people can say he's cheesy and they can say whatever. He's the OG. And the wisdom and the knowledge that he spits out about the human mind and human connection and human personality is unmatched of anybody.
Yeah, and if you listen, because I used to listen to his audiobooks.
Yes,
years ago. Like, I'd do it when I was driving. And what he's done that's interesting, what I like about him, is he's evolved, but he's kept his base of fundamentals, you know, have stayed so strong. But he still learns new. And like you're saying, he keeps himself relevant to do it for 20, 30 years.
And people get caught up, and I get there's a little bit of a cheese factor there, but he's so damn good, man. It's like drinking from a fire hydrant, man. He's so good.
Yeah. All right, Joe Rogan.
Man, the podcasting goat.
Yeah.
Genius. I don't think people realize how smart he is.
Yeah.
Probably, I think because he wasn't on a TV. He's not going to ever be up there with like a Barbara Walters and stuff in people's mind, but probably one of the greatest interviewers ever.
Yeah. Conversationalist.
That's a great word. Self-made.
Yeah.
He took podcasting. Obviously, we both know there's no money in podcasting. Yep. And he's a multi-millionaire from podcasting, possibly a billionaire from it.
I think he'll be the first billionaire to speak on that. His Spotify deal is coming up.
Yep.
And he holds all the cards.
They're
going to have to pay him a bazillion.
And isn't it crazy how quickly that – I feel like that deal he just signed with him.
Uh-huh.
I guess time flies.
Because he can leave and start his own Spotify.
Yep. Absolutely. So
how much you gonna pay? You got to pay him whatever the fuck he wants.
Right. McAfee went and created his own empire, and he's learning now. Maybe it wasn't as great to go to ESPN.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
For sure.
Joe Rogan just. My issue with Joe Rogan is, I'm not in my car enough. I don't travel because I live in Canton. So like the 3-hour podcast,
long.
It's really hard for me to. Thank God for TikTok and Reels.
Yeah, I do love though his diversity and his guests. He will have everybody.
His Kennedy with Robert Kennedy,
dude, savage. God, great show.
So great.
All right, so Sean Wallen.
I like a lot of what he's.
Am I pronouncing his last name right?
Waylon Wallen. Wallen. I like a lot of what he does.
Yeah.
I feel like he might be a little bipolar. Every once in a while, he goes on some tangents.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to know how much of it's real and how much of it's not.
Yeah.
It's kind of swinging dick stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
he's moving into the.
And now he's moved into the mayor's thing.
It's
he's
a found, couple things. They're all doing it. Yeah, even Andy Elliott's moving into it.
Because they're all follow and do what each other do. That's my whole.
Such a weird
that's
thing.
My whole thing with that space is they all.
Power couples.
Right. So suddenly. They've all become power couple focused, and they're all getting a sense of spirituality in them.
Yeah.
They all want to talk about, now I don't know what they,
sure,
God, but, yeah. Their big general thing, which is a good thing. And I love that. I mean, got to have a strong spouse. I agree with that completely. Mm-hmm. And man, I believe there's got to be a spiritual connection, but it's always weird to me how they all jump on the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Sean has definitely realized that, and he is capitalizing on it. I think Sean is probably like me. He is a great hustler. I don't know that he's a great businessman.
Yeah.
I've had a little interaction with his company, and it's not a well-run company.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's just so – he caught fire. He learned the social media thing so great that he's able to add another zero to what he makes compared to what I make by hustling.
COVID helped him a lot with the show business and his content. But I agree with you 100%. It is – just copy each other's shit.
Yeah, it's weird.
In a strange way. And that's what I find.
Yeah, the marriage thing is definitely the hobby horse right now.
Now they're doing shit like, which I find very strange. These cruises where you can take a cruise and join them.
Yeah.
Like him and his wife on a cruise. Like, that's just fucking weird, man. Like, I'm not, that doesn't sound interesting to me.
Yeah, I guess
at all.
I don't want to go on a cruise and sit in marriage seminars.
And then fuck no.
I'll go to a marriage seminar, but I don't want, if I'm going to cruise, I'm there to party.
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't want to do that shit at all. All right, let's go with Paul Harvey. Do you know much about Paul Harvey?
You know, a little before my time.
Yeah.
But I mean, with the OG guy.
Dude, he's fucking champ. Paul Harvey was the best.
I mean, some of the things he would say were amazing.
And he predicted, Joe Rogan did a thing on him recently. In 1965, you can go pull it up after we're done and look it up. Paul Graham. Or Paul Harvey, 1965 predictions of the future, and he fucking spits out what the world is right now.
Isn't he God made a farmer too? Isn't that his famous speech?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, a great orator.
Yeah. All right, Billy Graham.
I mean, led more people to Jesus than anybody ever.
That's
did it
I
without
think.
Ever with. And here's the most impressive thing: him and Rick Warren, the only two. No scandal, no accusations, no threat of scandal, kept his reputation the entire time, kept his name the entire time. When the church tried to turn on him, because they tried to turn on him because he ministered to Bill Clinton after his affair.
Yeah.
He stood with Bill Clinton and told the church basically to go pound sand.
Mm-hmm.
And just seems to me, a man of integrity who believed Jesus was the way, the truth, and the life and wanted everyone to hear about it.
Very dignified.
Yes.
Like when you listen to Billy Graham speak, like I'm just, even today, like I'll listen to his old shit.
Yes.
And
he had one message, Jesus.
Golly, man, he was gifted. Like it was thrust upon him because he was so young. I mean, he was, you know, he was kind of like you guys, the young preacher. And he, until he was 100 or 99,
to the day he died.
However. Crazy. Now, isn't his son
Franklin?
Who started Liberty University?
No, that was Falwell.
There you go. Totally different people. All right. Yeah. I watched that documentary though on that
thing.
They like to see the old wifey get played with, son.
Man, yeah, it is.
Good Lord.
I don't get the, let's just sidetrack for a minute. I know this is a leadership podcast.
No, let's go. We can do whatever
what
we want.
What makes a man want to watch another man rail his wife?
I don't know. And I can't even put myself, I think, like you in that headspace.
I can't even comprehend it.
It wouldn't even approach the road that leads to the interstate that then goes to the city of wherever that resides.
Yeah, I don't even.
I can't even
comprehend that I want some dude to rail my wife.
Yeah, but you know what I would do if I was somebody that liked that? Just because I know how I am now, especially learning what I've learned in life, I'd be like, dude, I love that shit. And I wouldn't hide it, and it wouldn't come out in no fucking weird thing.
Oh, no, no. If you're into it, you're into it.
I would, because I do a lot, I got a lot of things that people don't like that I do. And I'm like, bro, that's my shit.
Yeah, dude, own your crazy. I get that. I just don't
I could never.
Hey, and if you like someone to rail your wife, that's cool, 100%. Man. I'm not judging you.
Hell no.
I'm just telling you I don't understand it.
Yeah, it's tough. I could never.
Yeah.
I have no freaking clue.
She starts making noises with the other guy that she ain't ever made with me, there's going to be an issue.
100%. And I think that at some point, maybe these guys get so powerful, like as far in their own heads and influence, like you use, that they got to find something to get their rocks off. But so outlandish.
Well, you heard like the greatest, I think we've talked about this on our other podcast before, the greatest ever is Jake the Snake on Joe Rogan.
Oh,
Jake the Snake Roberts.
Dude,
and he talked about how he couldn't get off. He said, once you've seen a woman do a donkey in your hotel room, normal sex just doesn't work. And I'm like, what?
Dude, you got to love that fucking guy.
Yeah.
Dude, so have you been keeping up? Do you still follow Buff any? Have you been?
Yeah, he's doing good.
He looks good, man.
He looks great.
He's no longer dying his shit jet black.
Yeah, his head's on straight. Men. Did you see Ice Train die today?
No.
I saw DDP posted that.
Damn. No, I did not. Fuck me, man.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm going to get into this quick question.
Let's go.
Wrestling question. Better worker, Hart or Piper?
Hart or Piper?
Yeah, Bret the Hitman Hart.
Overall, Piper, but in the ring, Hart.
Yeah.
But if you're going to take total package, gimmick, ability to cut a promo, and all of it, Piper.
Yeah. All right. That's a good answer.
That was just the one random wrestling question out of nowhere?
Just a random
love it.
That I wrote in. All right. So what's a common trait that you see in poor leaders or people that think that they're leaders and they're really not?
Yeah. The desire to want to include everyone in the decision-making.
Okay. That's a good one.
People who don't know how to lead want to lead with consensus. True leaders just lead whether no one agrees or not.
Yeah. I think all bad leaders I've seen want to be called a leader.
Oh, absolutely. They want to tie.
It doesn't make you a leader. Absolutely.
Just because you're on our school board doesn't make you a leader. You've never led anything in your life.
100%.
And so the people think a leader